This episode is brought to you by Baron Fig. Find out more at mofonepodcast.com/Baron Fig.
Okay, internet peoples, this is Frank Kozik, also known as the guy that makes lots of junk for everybody in the world, and you're listening to Master of One Podcast.
Welcome to the Sandbox episode of the Master of One Podcast, part two for this week. This week we talk about music, art, design, toys, and everything else in between, with co-owner and principal designer for Invisible Creature, Don Clark. I'm Andrew, your master of art and design.
I'm Patrick, your master of television and film.
And I'm Luke, your master of toys and games.
So pack your bags, because we're taking a trip down memory lane.
Don't forget the guitars.
The M of One podcast is all about the creative, so we are excited to partner with Baron Fig. They are the makers of the world's best notebooks and writing tools. Baron Fig is all about the thinker, the people that create and inspire those around them. And all of their products are a result of community feedback. You won't find a better notebook than their flagship Confidant, and once you use it, you'll be hooked. Head over to mofonepodcast.com/Baron Fig to learn more and get yours today. So for this sandbox, we are excited to talk to somebody who is a much sought after, a much anticipated guest. In fact, we have heard from you, the listener, time and time again that we need to talk to this guy. And so we have finally made good on our promise to you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome one half of Invisible Creature, principal designer Don Clark to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, dude. What's up?
Hey, thanks for having me.
You should know that doesn't ever clap for the guests, and he just clapped for you. So,
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel extremely honored. Thank you, Luke.
You're welcome. Yeah. You deserve it.
But we also clap too, though, is the thing.
you guys like everybody.
It's been a while, for sure.
Thank you to all of you for clapping.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Don, so people out there know who you are. Like I said, they've been clamoring for this episode, but for the handful of people out there who just showed up on planet Earth, why don't you tell them a little bit about who you are? Give us the Wikipedia page about you.
Oh, man. Okay, so yeah, I am an illustrator, graphic designer. I started a company called Invisible Creature with my brother a little over 10 years ago. Before that, we had a design firm called Asterix Studio that kind of did music packaging, web design before, you know, MySpace and social media took over for bands. I also played in bands for years. I'm a husband, a father of three. We have a ranch right outside of Seattle, so on the weekends I'm, wrangling goats, alpacas, chickens, dogs. It's crazy. So that's my life in a nutshell.
Wow. Okay. So looking at your.
So you don't sleep, I think, is what I heard.
Yeah, exactly.
I've gotten better about that. I used to not sleep, and now I sleep like a baby. But right. I think it's because of all the work. That's why I sleep so well.
Yeah, you work until you physically are so exhausted your body doesn't function.
Exactly.
I like that. Yeah. I like that method. Looking at your studio, we've been following you for a while, and you unlike a lot of people are really good at posting shots of your studio. Posting shots about what your workspace looks like. And honestly, that's something that everybody wants to see. It's a nice peek into the process of the designer. Talk to us a little bit about what makes your workspace unique and fun and what drives the aesthetic of that.
Yeah, so one thing that's been important the last like 5-6 years is just working closer to family. Since the hours are a little bit gnarly, I like to be close to the kids and kind of have my workplace be accessible to them. And, you know, they always kind of, it's an open door. So our family was growing and the company was growing. So we found this spot that we weren't looking for a ranch. We weren't looking for a barn studio. We were just looking for, a little more space. And when we found this place, it was, they had this old barn on the property, and I walked up and I'm like, gosh, this would be pretty awesome to work in, you know, maybe the rest of my life. So, yeah, we've been here almost 5 years, and, you know, it's kind of like, people call it, you know, our clubhouse. It kind of is, actually, you know, funny story. We had like an electrician out here one time, and he's like, "So do you guys run a daycare here?" And I'm like, "No, it's just, I'm a grown man with a lot of toys." So yeah, it's just, it's a cool place. I love working here and being, you know, 150 feet from the house, and we can have clients out here. It's kind of a separate entryway for them. So yeah, I love it. And it's, you know, I've had offices downtown Seattle and a little outside of Seattle, and I've worked at home, and, this place feels like the kind of the forever studio. So that was that was kind of the goal.
Absolutely. So let's jump like way far back. If I understand right, your dad was a designer at NASA. Is that correct?
Grandfather.
Okay.
Yes. Yep.
That's the reason we had you here to correct me. So.
to clarify.
Hey, you're just one generation off. You're so close.
Close. So jumping back, and you talk a bit about your childhood and those influences when you're coming up. Talk a bit about how that shaped, you know, up into your adulthood to now.
Yeah. So, you know, having a grandpa that got paid to draw meant that, you know, maybe we could do it as well. I mean, it wasn't out of the realm of possibility for us, at least for when we were kids. We didn't know any better. So, right. You know, most of our friends, their dads, you know, had kind of blue collar jobs. My dad was a minister growing up. And so, you know, my grandpa got to draw spaceships at NASA. And that was like, you know, extra cool. So yeah, he passed in 1996, and you know, I think since then he's become larger than life to us. It's just been something that I continue to pore over his stuff and aspire to even get close to how he could draw. But my mom was a singer, my brother's a singer in a successful band, my dad's a woodworker. It's, you know, we've just been, you know, influenced by the arts ever since we can remember. And I didn't really have a backup plan. It was always, you know, I want to do this. I want to draw. I want to make music. So,
and you had those examples in your life the whole time.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It was super supportive.
I think that's huge because so many stories that we hear, and we've heard a ton of stories now, about people who are like, I did design work in that didn't make any sense to my family. Like I had to, you know, my family grew up doing this, whatever. And I have to constantly, like make a pitch for what I'm doing and why what I'm doing actually counts as a living. So you kind of surpassed that hurdle. You kind of got to skirt around it, which is nice.
Totally. Yeah. It was kind of something that had been in the family for a long time. It is funny that you bring up a good point though. I think, you know, my in-laws weren't exactly, you know, they didn't exactly know what I did for a living, you know, for a while. I remember, a long time ago, my first kind of like bigger job in Seattle, I was able to like have some of the art be on a billboard, and we picked him up from the airport and we were driving through, and you know, I was like, I actually drew that. And it was the first time they were actually like, oh, he doesn't play video games all day? Like crazy. I know he sits in front of the computer, but I wasn't sure. So
up in his clubhouse.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, no, totally. It has been cool.
So talk to me a little bit. So I'm looking back through your body of work, and I'm reliving all of these days of your being in bands. You and your brother started a band. And it seems like most people start posters because their friends are in bands or they're in bands. Did you guys get into give us a hint of like what you guys did in the music scene? And then is that kind of the transition into what you've done for the last, you know, 10, 15 years?
Absolutely. The music scene is the foundation for everything that we're doing now. Even my personal life, my wife worked at the record label. That's where I met her. So, mm-hmm. We started playing music in the mid 90s. We got signed to a label in 95, 96. My brother and I both had separate bands, got signed to the same label. And then we hit the road and met a lot of people. And when it came time to kind of get our stuff together and, you know, wanting to actually, you know, get married and start figuring out career stuff, it made sense to just fuse our two passions, which was art and music. And we didn't know how to do that. We had no clue. But we had so many friends and connects in the industry that when it came time to start that, we knew exactly who to go to. And so for the first 5 years of our company, I mean, it was 95% music packaging for the same types of bands. I mean, if you've been following us for 15 years, you know that we, you know, it was like the same type of bands over and over again.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. We had steady work, and that transitioned into posters and then retail and illustration. And now we don't do a ton of music just because I think the landscape has changed, but, that was everything.
So what kind of music, and you may, you know, it might be more of like a vast kind of thing, but what kind of music do you gravitate to when you're working in the studio, being a music guy, being a part of a band? What kind of stuff do you listen to when you're trying to create something?
Yeah, good question, because that's obviously evolved, I think, as I've gotten older as well.
Techno.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I listen to a lot of electronic music. I don't listen to heavy music really much anymore. I mean, there's a handful of bands that I like, but I think that is, you know, I'm almost 42. I think it just changes, you know, my interests have just changed.
Sure.
But yeah, actually a lot of electronic stuff, girl-fronted electronic stuff is some of my favorite. I love hip-hop. But I also listen to a ton of podcasts throughout the day too. I never thought I'd be listening to quote unquote talk radio, but, with the advent of, podcasts, I mean, it's been amazing. So, I listen to a lot of stuff during the day. And you know, thank God for streaming music, tons of stuff.
So I want to know how much the creative side of your, like your musician life transitioning into your more graphic design life, what elements of those things, where is the crossover? Where's the bleed over? And then where are the extreme opposites that you found to be true in expressing creativity through those different avenues?
Good question. The bleed over for me, since I've been out of the band for over eight years, I'm pretty disconnected, to be honest, with like, anything happening with the band. I'm more of like a fan now of my brother, and I, you know, love those dudes. And even when I was in the band and then we had our company, you know, I would shut down the company and go on tour, and there wasn't a whole lot of overlap. I mean, people that were fans of the band, only a handful knew about Asterisk or Invisible Creature. It wasn't, they're really kind of two different worlds. I think if you follow kind of our career, you know about both, but, it really is pretty separate. And after a while, I just couldn't do both. That's one of the reasons why I stepped down, is I couldn't continue to be a father and a bit, you know, an artist, an illustrator, and a business owner and tour. It's a blessing to have that dilemma. And I understood that, but, I had to kind of choose one or the other. And, so that's what I did. But my brother is definitely, he rides the line between design and music much more than I do now.
But so as far, and that makes sense. You know, it's kind of one of those focus on one thing, and you can be better at that one thing. But as far as the process of creating, the creative problem solving, if you were, you know, whether you're doing something for a client that is product packaging, or you're doing something for your band when you were back in a band. Is the process for creating the same for both, or are there like they dramatically different? Because I've only been on one side of it.
Yeah.
And so I just want to know if there's like a distinction that has kind of taken place, or if there's some things that have come over from that other world.
Yeah, good question. In terms of the process of creating music, like songwriting or design, they're separate. So just to give you a glimpse of how we used to do it, my brother and I would get together at like 6 or 7 a.m. in the morning and write music for 2 hours before work. And then we would, then we would go design, and then, you know, for 8 hours or whatever, and then go live a, you know, a normal life after that. So it really was like a, we compartmentalized it quite a bit. Nowadays, I think if you asked him, it's much more fluid. I think he's able to, you know, go write a song during lunch, you know, but I've never been able to really,
not quite as regimented.
Exactly. I've never been really able to do that. It's much more like, okay, here's music time, here's design time. You know, and my clients are what's putting food on the table. And so I need to give them, the priority, during the day. So yeah, good question.
Is that actually like blocked out on a calendar? I mean, do you actually say like, well, I have from 5:30 to 6:15 for music, and or is this more of just, you're kind of keeping lists in your head and kind of just ever internally changing priority and adapting to it? Or you wake up in the morning and make a list for the day? Like, what's your process for establishing that, so you are getting the most important thing done at any given time?
Yeah. So I haven't played music in over 8 years. So, but back in the day, we would schedule it, and we would, you know, schedule a record, you know, here's when we would like to put out a record. You know, this is the new album cycle. We would start working 6 to 9 months before that record, you know, writing songs, getting into pre-production. I mean, it was just GarageBand. I think it still is GarageBand with my brother, or maybe it's Pro Tools, but you know, it was scheduled time to work on the music. It just, things got more difficult when we're adding kids to the fold and responsibilities. Yeah. And we had to have like a shut off time, you know, like, or else it just got out of control. When we didn't have any kids and, you know, our wives worked and stuff, it was different. So it's been almost a decade since I've had to do that. But that's how we used to do it.
Is that how you approach, so minus the music side of it, is that how you approach all the different projects that you guys have going on at Invisible Creature? Are you, do you regiment yourself to project by project throughout the day, or do you kind of tackle, you know, kind of push a couple things at once depending on what the day looks like?
Yeah. So we, it's so funny. I've tried so many different kind of like project management apps and things like that.
Right, but yeah, absolutely.
At the end of the day, I literally have a chalkboard up on the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at it right now. I've got the projects that I'm working on the chalkboard, and I literally just erase them when they're done. And in my mind, I know when stuff is due. I know that I've got 6 months to finish this. I've got 2 weeks to finish this. And I toggle them throughout the day. I wish I was more organized, but I've never been able to do that. In 15 years, it's always been like, you know, part of the week is this client, this part of the week is personal projects. We really like to release our own products throughout the year, so I schedule that stuff in. So it's kind of a organized chaos a little bit. And I've attempted to do different things, try to organize stuff, and it just never really works. And I prefer the analog method of just seeing the projects up on the wall and focusing on that. So,
okay. So, and ultimately it comes down to what works best for you, right?
Right?
I mean, nobody, you're a grown adult
man
who owns his own business.
Right.
No one is making,
said, get
you're
off
not
my
in design
back.
School.
I've got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
As long as you're hitting deadlines, your clients don't care what you do to make it happen. So
exactly.
So speaking of clients, let's just run through a non-exhaustive list just real quick, just to give people a foray into some of the client work that you do, because to say the least, it's impressive. So you've worked with Target, you've worked with Vampire Weekend, you've worked with Lecrae, you've worked with Alice in Chains, you've done so many different art posters and things for various different clients. You do apparel, you do toys, both vinyl and then kind of classic vintage style toys. You've done a lot. So,
well, not to mention huge, like Nike and Facebook and Adobe and like huge,
you're
insane.
You've been around the block. I want to know from your perspective, what is it about this kind of work What is it about your particular brand or style of work that keeps these companies coming back to you, that keeps your client list growing and expanding?
I don't know. I feel like it's evident, but I'm just a huge fan of art, and I'm a huge fan of products that make me smile and stuff that I love to have around me. And that's the world that I want to live in. And that's the kind of world I create. And the goal is always to work on stuff that not only, you know, makes us happy, makes us smile, but also makes people look at and go, oh, you know, I remember seeing wooden toys like that. That was, my grandparents had those, and, you know, something that, even if it's a moment of nostalgia, are we trying to recreate our youth? I don't know, but it's, I hope that, our work represents the fun that we have when we're creating it. I love color, and I love just the the optimism of the mid-century, and it's almost like completely opposite of what it is now. I feel like I wasn't alive then, but it's I'm only alive now, so I know the times we're in now, and so I just love old stuff and putting our spin on it where it doesn't feel, like it's too, I don't want it to feel retro. I want it to feel now, but I want it to remind you maybe of something you've seen before. That's the stuff that I enjoy working on and kind of creating putting our own products into the world. And as far as the clients that come to us, it's been amazing and I'm so thankful, but I think they see, that stuff that, that we put on our site and that that we put out there, and, it looks fun to them. That's the only thing I can imagine.
So when they contact you, you don't ask them, and they don't offer up, hey, here's why we're reaching out to you.
Most times they're telling me why, and they're referencing a previous project. We love what you did for Lego or Cinerama or something like that. It's usually from a previous project. We also have been around for a while. The first few years that we started, I was like, where did you hear about us? Crazy. I can't believe you called us. But now, I feel like we got started at a really good time. The beginning of the internet. I mean,
yeah,
literally that's when the design on the internet hit, is like, 1999, 2000. That's when we started.
Right.
And I think starting now would be much more difficult for us. So, yeah, very thankful for timing and the type of influence we've had. It hasn't really been anything we've done per se to get that out into the world. It's just people share it, which has been awesome.
Well, I mean, what you're saying, I know it was apparent to me before we started talking. I mean, beforehand, before you, jumped on to talk with us, we were kind of talking back and forth about the work that y'all put out. And I think the statement I made is, it was just obvious that y'all just love to create for creation's sake. I mean, it's from the environment that you work in to the stuff you're putting out to what comes up on your feed and everything. It just seems like you're always crafting an environment that you just want to live in. I think that's what really comes across. And so I totally get that. I'm curious, through all this stuff, I mean, I'm seeing like the Cinerama stuff, all these, the albums, the NASA project, the biggest story, the toys, like all this stuff that I'm seeing. Do you have a project through all this stuff that specifically was just very close to you, that just meant a lot to get to do?
Yeah, I feel like I have kind of like this running in my head, like top 10 list or even top 5 things that I've been like so thankful to be able to work on. It's hard. Sometimes I don't even know where to start, 'cause I'll be like, oh gosh, that was a turning point in our career. So like, for instance, working on Foo Fighters in 2006 was a major turning point for us, because up to that point, we were working on punk rock, hardcore, you know, smaller records. We were doing some, you know, greatest hits and stuff like that, but it wasn't, you know, top three bands in the world size.
Right.
So that, and that was amazing, because it could have gone awry in so many directions, but it ended up, we ended up pulling through and created something that they liked and we liked. We almost, you know, it almost, we hit a lot of dead ends with the client, with the management, and ended up being great. But after that came out, we got a lot of calls from bigger bands. So that's one big turning point. Creating our Wooden Blocks was another big turning point that, you know, we're in like Anthropology and Nordstrom and MoMA, and you know, we're suddenly in these stores, which was
these nice little mom and pop shops.
Trying to
help out the struggling artists.
You can't spell MoMA without mom.
Exactly. You know, that's funny, because we were in those little stores too, and so that's another really cool thing. Then the NASA thing, you know, that my grandfather's legacy, the way that that just exploded on the internet, because we launched it, you know, like 2 days before JPL put theirs out. It was a really, there's so many stories to be had with like us being in the right time at the right place. And then, you know, creating a children's Bible, you know, that's another big deal.
Right.
So yeah, I think there's just been a handful of those like really kind of special moments. So
I love that there's a, I mean, you mentioned the NASA thing, you mentioned the children's Bible thing, you talked about how your grandfather worked with NASA, and your dad was a preacher, or he was in ministry. I love that there's these little pops of not just nostalgia, which is just seeped in your work, but there's also these hits of homages to your parents and to your grandparents and your lineage kind of thrown in there as well. It makes your work, once you know this about you, it makes your work so much more than just a cool looking image. It becomes a piece of your family kind of being handed down or circled back to. And I think that makes it mean so much more and makes it super cool.
That's awesome. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I think for most people, family is everything, you know, and I've never looked at, I think even growing up, it wasn't like, oh, I want to go work at an agency, or I didn't look up to Pentagram. I looked up to the Bones Brigade and my grandfather and, you know, Metallica. And so, and then as I got older, you know, and found out about the Eames, you know, Charles and Ray Eames, and, you know, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and George Lucas, and just kind of owning your own world, you know, like you said, paying homage to where you came from and where you're going, and all of that is wrapped into one. I don't like to think of myself as, you know, I'm not necessarily clocking out at the end of the day. It's like, this is all with me. My family is involved with me and what I'm doing, and my kids inspire me with the stuff that I create, and you know, they come up here and get to see what I'm doing, and so yeah, it's just one big, you know, one big life cycle.
Sure. Awesome. So you've mentioned a couple times that it seems like you're in the right place at the right time for getting this going in this career that you're on now. What was there a moment that you decided or something that happened where you said, okay, I think, obviously there's a moment where you stopped doing music and started doing design full time, but what was that moment and why switching from, music and art to just art?
Couple reasons. The last tour that I came back from, when I left, my son was, he's like 2 or 1.5 mm-hmm. or something. When I left, he wasn't talking yet. And when I came back, like after 8 weeks, he was like, you know, I opened the door and he's like, Daddy. And yeah. I felt like, you know, I missed that transition of him like learning to talk. And, as cool as it was to show up with him saying that, I felt like it wasn't a sense of, this is my job, I'm a touring musician, Daddy, this is what Daddy does. It was a secondary thing. It was like, it was my icing on the cake. I went on tour. I made some money on tour, so I wasn't like leaving the family, and you know, it was a job, but it was a job that I could afford to leave. I also was just done with metal. I hate to say it. I wasn't as angry as I was when I was 17.
Sure.
I had some of the angst starts to wear off.
Yeah,
right?
Your brother's just still angry, I guess.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
He's just so mad all the time.
Yeah, you know, when I've got two little blonde girls at home, you know, like, you know, it's hard to be mad at, you know, kids. So
they're singing "Let It Go" at you. Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, I get it. Exactly. I'll let it go.
Exactly. And yeah, it was just, I think it was a phase, an amazing phase in my life, but I was like, when I hung up the guitar, it's so funny because I'm actually getting ready to, my son now wants to play guitar, and so now we're going to like, you know, we're going to go take lessons with, lessons with him, and you know, I haven't picked up a guitar in so long because it's just, it hasn't, I hate to say it, it hasn't interested me. Sure. So yeah, it was like I remember exactly when I realized I want to leave the band, and I told my wife, and she was always supportive, and she's like, hey, that, you know, when you know, you know. So
yeah,
it was cool.
Cool.
All right. So I have one more question, and then we'll go into our finals. And really, I just want to make sure that we touch base on this, because this is a really cool project that you had your hands in and helped curate and be a part of, which is the whole Heartwork project that you did at the tail end of last year. Maybe tell everybody just a quick synopsis of what it was and where this idea came from and what the whole purpose of it was.
Yeah. So let's see. One of my very first job with Target was creating a set of posters for Target House at St. Jude Children's Hospital in Memphis. And it was an amazing project. It was like, over almost 10 years ago. And I was getting emails from parents of children that were at the hospital saying, hey, I just want to let you know my son or daughter love the art. And, you know, we did a Valentine's Day one and it said love. And one of the moms was like, that was the first word that my daughter could say was love because of the poster. And it was like, it was really touching. And so, one of my friends and art directors at Target, his name's Ted, he was like, you know what? I've been wanting to do this. I forwarded him a few of the emails, and he replied, and he's like, you know what? I've been wanting to do this charity thing for Target House. You know, I've been there before, and their art room is, you know, they have just kind of like some paper and color, you know, some crayons. It'd be cool to do a thing where we, you know, create art, and the proceeds go towards art supplies at the art room at Target House. You know, what if we did like, you know, asked 10 different artists to do a limited run, and we sold them. We came up with a name. And so, I think last year was year number 6, and we're talking about what we're going to do this year. But it's been awesome. I think everyone we've asked has said yes. They've donated their time. They've created amazing pieces. We've tried different things. You know, we've done like limited edition, super limited, like, you know, 10 copies that are signed by the artist. And now we do, I think 50 editions of 50 for a limited time. And all the proceeds go towards art supplies. And, it's been awesome. And it's a special project, and I have Ted to thank for the idea. So he's my partner in that.
It's so cool because we've had, you know, we've been doing this now for almost 3 years. Podcasting.
Awesome. Congrats.
And a handful of the artists you had last year are like good friends of the show.
Awesome.
And so it was cool to hear about this from their perspective and to talk to them, specifically Jared Mariama and Andrew Kolb. We just recently talked to Josh Holtzclaw.
Awesome.
And so it's cool to be able to see this from both sides of the perspective and to see that this thing is a passion project with such a noble and beautiful purpose is, I mean, if there's anything that you can kind of get into, this is for sure it. So
awesome. Thanks
for helping put that on. It's super cool.
It's been a blessing. Thank you.
So we're going to, we want to be cognizant of your time. So we're going to go and jump into our final questions. I'm going to kick it off, and then someone will take it from me. But I love your do undo drawing kit. I think this Thanks. Is very sweet. So this is how about instead of me telling, and maybe tell the idea behind it, and then I'm curious how often you put together gifts for your clients.
Yeah, so every year we try to come up with something kind of cool and unique for our clients. At the end of the year, it's just a thank you for the clients that we worked with that previous year, and a lot of times I like to collaborate with my dad, who's a woodworker, and so. We were kicking around ideas. I had seen these wooden laptop chalkboards before, and I was like, you know what? Let's try that. Let's put our own spin on it. It'd be cool to kind of brand it, have a name for it. That's where it was born. And I think we only made like 14 or something, and we sent them out last year. But some of those client projects will turn into actual products that we put out. We're not sure if we're going to put out the chalkboard laptop, but that's how Stack and Scare was born, our wooden toys. We did our own unauthorized Lego project one year, and a month after Lego contacted us to work with them. So those things do snowball into new products or client projects, which are awesome. So yeah,
very cool.
So for my final question, it's kind of, you've done such a breadth of work with kind of people all over the place. Is there a category that you have not done work in that you're itching to do work in?
There's two, and okay. we're working on one of them, furniture. Mm-hmm. and installation art, outdoor pieces. Sweet. Those are two that are on our list.
When you say outdoor pieces, you mean not mural art, but
sculptures. Physical pieces. Mm-hmm. Sculptures. Yep. Cool. Yep.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, all right, yeah. I'm gonna ask a two-part question, only because one needs to be asked, and we should have asked it earlier, but we didn't. We got stuck in the depth of what we were talking about. What's with the name?
So the name evolved with the name came to be with my brother and I, a dictionary and a thesaurus at a coffee shop for about a span of 3 days, coming up with looking through and flipping through and finding cool words, and then adding adjectives or verbs to those words. And we had creature for a long time, and we found that there was another creature. We wanted something that was ambiguous. I didn't want studio or design attached to it. If someday we wanted to create, furniture, like I just said, we wouldn't be limited in what we were. And I also like the mystery of it. I love mystery. I love J.J. Abrams. He's like a champion of mystery. Hence, Invisible Creature was born. Yeah.
Sweet. Gotcha. All right. So here's my real final question. Okay. It's okay, Patrick. This is our show. We get to make the rules. It's every other time. It's fine. You have this theme that I've heard throughout the whole conversation, and it's this idea that work begets work. Like, you put out good work, and then other people see it, and then you get more work that's like that, maybe even bigger on a larger scale or whatever.
Right.
So there's people out there who are listening to this show, maybe even the person who's asking this question. There's no way to know for sure. But there's people out there who want to get to the next level with their work. What would you say to them about being visible? I know that's kind of funny as a play on your name, but being visible with your work so that it can get more of the same work.
Yeah, it comes down to putting out into the world the type of stuff that you want to keep doing. If you did something that, even if you did something that was maybe a large scale or you think might attract bigger clients, but you yourself were not passionate about doing, don't put it up, because not only are you not going to want to do that again, I feel like the potential clients or your, whoever's going to call you next, they can see through that. I think that they can see that, you know, and maybe they're not going to call at all because they can see through it. You know, they know that it's not your true self. And I know that that's super subliminal right. and weird, but, put the stuff that you enjoy out into the world, curate your own space, your own website, you know, take great photographs of your products, your work. And you know, I try to line up whatever we're doing with the people that I look up to, past and present, and does it at least fit into the ballpark of that kind of quality that I look up to? If it doesn't, I don't put it out there. And you know, that's really the goal. Just put out your best stuff that you love to do, and I think people will call.
That's perfect. All right, well, tell everybody where they can find you. Talk about maybe any projects you're allowed to talk about that are on the horizon, what we can expect to see from you, and where they can support you and give you money.
Our website is invisiblecreature.com. We have a shop there. Social media is iCreature. We're working on a few more children's books. Let's see. We're working on Lecrae's new album. What else can I talk about? Some more stuff for Target. And then I have a gallery show that is going to be happening at the end of the year. I won't say where yet, but, yeah, okay. we're working through on some stuff. So we're very, very thankful. Very busy.
Can you at least say it's local to you or East Coast or West Coast?
It is not. Okay. It is the South.
So okay. Yeah, it is the
yeah.
South.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, you like we said when we first started talking before we were on air, we just came from Creative South.
Yes.
And your work was everywhere. I saw pins and hats and shirts all over the place with your little mummy, your little one-eyed mummy face everywhere. Ironically, for those of you who don't know what Don looks like, that's actually a self-portrait.
Yes.
So there's
yeah,
their
have,
logo.
I have one eye. Yes, it's crazy. Yeah.
It's an uncanny likeness. All right, would you mind sticking around for us to help us draw some tokens?
Absolutely.
Perfect. All right, well, that's it for the interview portion. Up next, we're going to draw some tokens.
We are excited to be partnering with Baron Fig, and it is no secret that The Confidant is frankly one of the best notebooks out there. So yeah. If you're not familiar with it, it is their flagship hardcover notebook. And we've talked about it before, but on the show, yeah. it's you can get blank ruled or dot grid. It has perforated pages, super high quality. I think it's archival quality paper. It opens flat even if you're on like the third page. All yeah. this really cool stuff. Well, in addition, it's ever evolving. They are always listening to community feedback, and they're always improving on this already genuinely awesome notebook. I mean, seriously, everyone here uses it, and I think has used it since the Kickstarter campaign.
Yes.
But now The Confidant is available in three sizes. So they still have their flagship model, but they also have a plus size and a pocket size.
Yeah.
So just whatever fits you or what you do. I know, Andrew, you said that you love the extra real estate of the plus size.
Yeah, I like it. It's kind of one of those things where there's a use for the flagship size. And I thought that maybe once I transitioned to the bigger one, I wouldn't want to use that one anymore. But they definitely both have their place. If you're going to be sketching something that needs a little bit more real estate or taking more like copious notes that you need all in one place, the plus size one is definitely the way to go. But I still find myself using both. I go back and forth between my regular one. I haven't got my hands on a pocket one yet, but I will soon. And who knows, maybe that will even provide further exploration into ideas. So
here's the deal. It's an amazing notebook. There's no questions asked. Everyone that has used them swears by them. But if you need another reason to purchase one, Baron Fig is planting a tree for every Confidant they sell. So far, they have planted 98,521 trees.
But who's counting?
But who's counting? They're obviously very...
They're literally counting.
They hired someone only to count.
Right.
But the point is, if you need another reason, the notebook you buy is also going to plant a tree somewhere in the world. So head over to mofonepodcast.com/confidant. Check out the sizes. Check out the colors. Go ahead and pick yours up today.
Every week we draw tokens to figure out exactly what it is we're going to be talking about the next week on our Master Category episode. So I've got these three tokens here, Don. You can see they're physical. They're in my hands.
Okay.
I'm going to place them face down. I'm going to shuffle them up, and you're going to give me a number between 1 and 3. That will be for old Patrick. Go for it.
3.
Patrick, you got art and design, my friend.
Nice, nice, nice.
All right. 1 and 2, and this will be for Luke.
2.
I like the amount of thought he's putting into this. No, this was even a chin grabber for him.
This is heavy duty.
No.
This is heavy duty.
He was thinking it through.
Yeah.
Well, he did a good job for you, Luke. You got toys and games.
That means
I have TV and film. The categories have been divvied out. You did a great job. Again, thank you so much for being on the show. If you want to see links to all the stuff that we talked about in here, to see his amazing work, to see the work from Heartwork, just go to mofonepodcast.com and you can find show notes and links to all of that stuff. You can also connect with us on Slack. Just go to mofonepodcast.com/Slack and we have a community in there of almost 200 creatives, entrepreneurs, doers, artists. It's an amazing community full of encouragement and amazing work. It's a great, great time. Pop in there, say hi and connect with us. You can also connect with us on social media. Just search M of One Podcast. Literally, I think anything, that's where you find us. You can also support the show on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/mofonepodcast. For as little as $1, you can become a patron. For as little as $5, you can get our bonus blooper episode. And I imagine there's going to be a pretty good one coming this month because we just did 30 interviews over the course of 2 days. So I have a feeling there's going to at least be a handful of them. So that now is the time to jump on our Patreon channel and support the show. You can also find us on iTunes where you can subscribe. And then when you do that, rate and review the show. That costs you nothing, a little bit of time, but it helps us a ton. So please go on. If you like what you hear, even if you don't like what you hear, go on, review the show, rate it. It helps us out. But I think for now, we're going to get out of here. I'm Andrew.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Luke.
I'm Don.
Peace out.
Bye.
Hold on to your butts.
Thank you and good night.
Sandbox episode of the Master of One podcast, part 2 for this week. This week we talk about music, art, design, toys, and everything else in between with co-owner and principal designer for Invisible Creature, Don Clark. I'm Andrew, your Master of Art and Design.
I'm Patrick, your Master of Television and Film.
And I'm Luke, your Master of Toys and Games.
So pack your bags, because we're taking a try it again. Like a loon. Welcome to this sandbox episode of the... Let me try it again. I peaked.
Welcome to this sandbox episode. But...
What?
As good as it'll ever be.
Shut up. This would have been fine if I had just done it right. That's fine. Welcome to this sandbox episode of the Master of One podcast. Part 2 for this week.
Yes, yes,
this
start week. Over. You went,
why?
Well, welcome to this...
Welcome to this sandbox. Yeah, it's fine.
I heard something.